So it's not just one more program that you launch. It really becomes the core fabric of your company. That here we get people who are great, we keep people who are great, and we grow people who are great.
Hey gang, welcome back. Future Proof is the name of this little shindig. Welcome. I'm Bill Sheridan, your host. Really good to have you here. We got a good show on a really important topic this week, which we are going to get to. Let's see, right after I read this. This week's show is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses, dozens of instructors, unlimited, no limits on that customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. Okay, so sooner or later, we were going to have to talk about the Great Resignation, right? It was just going to happen. And by the way, anyone else as sick of that phrase as me, the Great Resignation? I mean, good God. It's kind of catchy for a week or so, right? But it's just gotten old and played really, really quick. But the good thing, I guess, is that everybody knows what you're talking about when you say it, right? Our people are leaving. They're not sticking around just because you want them to. They're empowered nowadays, more empowered than ever. In fact, they've got most of the power today, it seems like. They've got expectations about work. And if those expectations aren't met, man, they're not afraid to you know, quote LeBron James, of taking their talents to South Beach or elsewhere, for that matter, just getting out of town. So that presents some challenges for us employers, doesn't it? How do we find the right people? How do we keep the right people once we find them? How the hell do we know what they want in the first place, right? Gallup took a stab at answering that question recently in an article entitled "The Top Six Things Employees Want in Their Next Job." Author Ben Weigert says workers today most value these six things. Okay, number one, a significant increase in income or benefits. In fact, 64% said this is very important. Number two, greater work-life balance and better personal well-being. 61% call this very important. Number three, the ability to do what they do best, with 58% calling it very important. Number four, greater stability and job security at 53%. Number five, COVID-19 makes an appearance on the list. COVID-19 vaccination policies that align with my beliefs. 43% call this one very important. And number six, the organization is diverse and inclusive of all types of people, with 42% saying this one is very important. Interesting list there. A recent Harvard Business Review article suggests that employers, let's get that right, should look for ways to give employees the flexibility to pursue the things they're passionate about outside of work. Interesting one there, an interesting thought. In line with that whole work-life balance conversation, right? And looking ahead, this is interesting. Workforce futurist, Eric Termwende says the Great Resignation as we know it is just beginning. In a recent Fast Company article, he foresees four waves to this trend from 2020 through mid-2023. Okay, so wave number one was what he calls change by force. Okay, and this was when we were all forced to change where and how we worked as a result of the pandemic. Wave number two is what he calls change by choice. Now, this is what we're seeing right now. Employees leaving because they don't relate to their job or what's going on at work. Okay, wave number three is what he calls picking favorites, which is going to look like this. Termwende says, quote, we'll see A players put their foot down to stay remote. Employers won't have a choice but to let them work remotely if they want to keep them. But what happens to the rest of the office when the top dogs are allowed to work remotely? In short, animosity, disdain, and envy. Finally, frustration will boil over and people will find flexible jobs, end quote. And then finally, wave number four is what he calls kicking the can down the field, In other words, trying to attract top talent with bonuses and cash, which might, you know, it might be great for attracting talent, but not so great for keeping it. And Termawande says, quote, those who forget to improve culture and workplace experience will see high turnover rates in the next 8 to 12 months because they hire people who aren't a good fit, end quote. And we know what a disaster that can be. And Termawande ends his article with this. He says, quote, workforce reconfiguration is not only overdue, but necessary for the workplace of the future. Imagine this, 100 plus million people switching jobs, working in an atmosphere, lighting them up, right? Co-workers they want to be around in an environment encouraging their best work. This great resignation or reconfiguration will create better, happier teams, parents, and spouses with more energy and fulfillment, and better work from coast to coast, end quote. And if it were only that easy, right? But hey, it's a noble goal, right? Worth shooting for. We all want to be there. And it starts, I think, with that understanding of what our employees really want from their jobs, their bosses, their workplaces. So all that said, my guest this week, we do have a guest. She is Gabrielle Boucher. Gabrielle is a best-selling author. She's twice been a TEDx speaker, frequently called upon to speak and consult on millennial motivation and engagements for Fortune 500 companies, presidential campaigns, government agencies. The difference here is that she also happens to be a millennial, so she knows of what she speaks. Imagine that. She's also going to be the keynote speaker at the MACPA's 2022 Business and Industry Conference. And you know, she says understanding what employees want often comes down to a single word, and that word is purpose. Does your organization stand for something significant beyond just making money? And do they understand how their jobs, they, by the way, being your employees, do they understand how their jobs help bring you and the organization closer to realizing that purpose? So, interesting and important questions, and just a great talk this week. Glad you're here for it, because there are some terrific insights embedded in the next 30 minutes or so. Settle in, folks. Here is my conversation with Gabrielle Boucher. Well, Gabrielle, thanks so much for joining me today. You know, my first question, it seems like every day we see another article about what employees want. And it seems like they're all over the spectrum, right? I mean, we've seen everything. They want more money. They want more time, more meaningful work, more remote work, to work for a company that's focused on, you know, the climate or social justice. Or, yeah, I mean, whatever. There's whatever you want. There's an article about that particular thing. And so I don't even know where we start here. I mean, what are you hearing when it comes right down to that question, right? What employees are looking for more than anything these days?
I think the big thing that we have to consider is the post-COVID versus pre-COVID conversation.
Right.
What we were talking about 4 years ago or 3 years ago was once a wish and now is a demand. And so COVID really accelerated what was already in existence. And so what we were hearing pre-COVID, the workforce, particularly the younger workforce, were asking for more flexible time, wanting to work in how and when they wanted. They wanted more ownership of their work. They wanted more support around things like mental health, time management, even interpersonal support. Those things that were nice to have are now need to have in the post-COVID world. And I think that COVID really changed the role of employers. Whereas before, employers really had a fairly transactional role. I am your employer, therefore I pay you a certain amount, you take a certain amount of time off, and you work for us for a certain amount of time. COVID changed things where we have a very different relationship with the people who work for us, whether they're, you know, W-2 employees moving to 1099s, whether we're now no longer location specific, we're no we're no longer necessarily tethered to a particular office space. So it's really become this wild, wild west of how is it that we're engaging with our workforce.
And how are employers relating to that kind of shift, that dynamic there?
I think that they're left scratching their heads just as much as the employees are. I think on the right-hand side of COVID, employers are really considering what's the appropriate and sustainable role of us as employers. During COVID, it was all hands on deck. Do you need more technical support? Do you need more technical training? So they went above and beyond in that regard. Many employers went above and beyond in creating support for parents who were having to not only parent their children, then become school teachers, then have to become, you know, people who are managing their team from a remote workforce situation. So many employers, even during COVID, really started to expand their role. And for those companies who did decide to create more support and what we call in our frameology, which is whole person training, those employers really can't walk that back because now employees are coming to expect it. And so it's kind of that basic tenet of leadership is that you can't really take away something that you've been able to enable people with. And so I think many employers are asking this question and they're really being authentic about it. The clients that we're working with, the companies and conferences that I'm coming in and speaking to, they're all saying, Gabrielle, we really do want to create a workplace so good people don't want to leave. We just don't know how.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And is the great resignation that we've been hearing so much about, is that kind of a byproduct of all this? I mean, how fed up are employees these days? How real is this thing?
It's the great resignation is very, very real. Whereas before it was kind of the rumblings of, sure, we would like to get into real estate or go out on my own or become a life coach or, you know, do whatever it is that we were kind of dreaming of doing before COVID. But COVID really created this fork in the road for many people of, am I going to stick it out? Or is this a sign from the universe that I need to change? And so the great resignation is really an outflow of that. That being said, we're seeing things start to normalize again. Now that folks are getting back into the office, now that mask mandates are loosening up, depending on the state that you're in, people are now saying, okay, now that we've restabilized, they're asking two core questions, which is, do I matter to this company? And does the work that I do matter? And so the employers who are able to clearly articulate the answers to those questions, do I matter? And does the work that I do matter for their employees, are the ones who are really thriving during this work experience.
So let's take each of those kind of in turn then. Do I matter? So what are the companies that are getting this right doing that the rest of us aren't?
Yeah, the companies that are doing well when it comes to helping their employees find purpose and meaning at work are helping to create a very clear connection between what those individuals are good at, what kind of problems those employees are good at solving, and what problems those employees are currently equipped to solve. And so as employers, we are all about solving problems. We solve problems for our customers and our clients, for our vendors, for our employees. Every single one of us, no matter who we are and what we're doing, we're all solving problems. So the problem-solving opportunity for an employer is to say, I have a workforce of individuals who all have individual hopes and dreams. Most employers make the mistake of assuming that they're employees first. They're not employees first. They're people first. And so if you treat them like people, then you're going to have a much better time at actually engaging them as individuals. And so the companies that are doing really well are recognizing these people have hopes and dreams, relationships. Maybe they got in a fight with their partner. Maybe, you know, they just, you know, got into gardening, whatever it is. They're really complex individuals who are coming into work for us every single day. And if we can tap into the individual nature of work, we're going to keep them longer because every single employee wants to be seen. And so companies that are doing that well in a very practical way are, number one, training their managers on how to see and engage their employees to individualize work. Number two, they're empowering their employees to find meaning and connection to work. It's not about, this is the mission of us as a company. Every company I work with has a mission statement. buried deep in some hidden disclosed location on a website somewhere that some consultant came up with. I mean, it's so useless, but we hold on to these mission statements by our fingernails because we think that that's the purpose of the company. It's not. If someone on your team, if I can't talk to a secretary, frontline employee, your accounting staff, if they can't articulate your mission statement, it's not a mission statement. It's just some internal mantra. They have to know what impact are they making in the world. And so the companies that are doing that well and in a really relatable way are the companies that are doing the best when it comes to not only retaining the great people that they have, but attracting those good people to begin with.
That's really interesting. And do things like, there's been a lot of buzz and talk about, personal wellness, whether it's physical or mental well-being, this whole notion of remote work, does all of that kind of tie into this notion of, do I matter? How much does that come into play into this conversation?
Yeah, it's everything. It's absolutely everything. So the conversations around the future of work all come down to one thing, and it's respect. Mm-hmm. If employees feel respected and trusted to do their work, they're going to want to be more engaged. However, most companies aren't built on that core foundation of respecting and trusting employees. In fact, it's the opposite. Right. It's make sure that they don't steal from you. Make sure that they don't get you to a position where, you have some sort of legal recompense. Make sure that you don't get into a situation where you're losing customers or clients. We see our employees as liabilities, not assets. And so part of that, it really stems from the Industrial Revolution, where we saw people as disposable, like, oh, hey, you can't, make it great. I'll get someone who's, 10 years younger doing it for me. Or, you're essentially a cog in a wheel. And one of the things I'm most excited about the future of work is I think that companies that are fairly data-driven, most companies say that they're data-driven, but that just means that they use spreadsheets. That doesn't mean you're data-driven. Right. Or you have like an app or something also doesn't make you data-driven. But people who are actually measuring the growth of the individual employees, not just the bottom line of the company, that is going to become more normalized the more platforms are simplified. Because there's so many amazing platforms out there that measure employee engagement, employee participation, but they're usually too complicated. And so leaders, CFOs, CEOs, chief people officers, they don't have time to learn new technology. And so the more I get excited, it really does have to do with humanizing the technology platforms to get to a place where just people can naturally use them to be able to track real performance that matters.
That's interesting when you talk about, tracking growth. What kind of things are we talking about here? When you're talking about each individual, as you said, is unique. I mean, how do we start to actually track something like that?
It really starts day one of when you've hired someone. So most people onboard like it's the Stone Age. So most people say, hey, welcome to the company. We're so glad you're here. Please sit at your desk and someone will get back to you about what to do next. And so what do? You sit and you hit refresh on your email inbox about 28 times waiting for your boss to tell you, hey, it's time for lunch. Mm-hmm. And so it's no wonder that we train employees to be reactive rather than proactive. A lot of my research has really been around generational engagement. And so when I found out that 65% of millennials, people under 40, want to start their own business one day, my mind about exploded because I said, companies are doing it wrong. They're pushing people into entrepreneurship because they see that that is the only alternative out there. Most people I talk to who want to go into, and I did over 2,000 surveys of people under the age of 45 who were dissatisfied in their workplace. This was during COVID. And the number one reason, and most of them said that they wanted to start their own business, the number one reason was that they didn't feel like they could be themselves at work, that they were not seen at work. They didn't know what kind of business that they wanted to start. They didn't know what kind of industry that they wanted to pursue. They just knew that they weren't happy with where they're at. And so if we can, day one, create an onboarding experience that's multi-week, that creates micro-learning opportunities for people to actually consume the information, because we just throw data at people as soon as they join our companies and hope that they catch it, and they don't. I mean, more than half of employees don't even know where the employee handbook is or, how to get help if they had questions.
Right.
And so creating multi-week micro-learning environments and creating growth track opportunities. As soon as you join the company, we should have three different tracks for you. Do you want to become an executive leader, a manager, whatever language that we use? Do you want, is your priority more on time off? Maybe you're a new parent and you want to have a bit more flexibility in time. We have a growth track for that. Or perhaps it's, I just want stability. I want to make to a certain point in my income. So we have a growth track for that. So if you have clear opportunities, clearly articulated career paths for people, it gives them an idea of where they're going. As humans, we're designed to move forward. That's why we have our faces in the front. Everything about us is forward moving. And most employers don't get that. They think, well, they're going to come here, sit down and work for me forever, and then get upset that they leave. Especially in a day and an age where I can Google my way into getting a job halfway around the world or starting my own company while waiting in line at Starbucks, we cannot assume that the people that we have still working for us are going to continue working for us if we don't give them clear career paths.
That's really interesting. You know, I've read a lot of interesting books recently and had a lot of interesting conversations with folks who keep coming back to the same point about, Tom Peters has a great phrase for it. He calls it extreme humanism, right? It's this idea of just treating our people like people and not like cogs in a machine or employees. And what you're saying is actually, you know, it's not just having a conversation with our folks, but creating an entire learning track or career path based on their wants and needs as human beings.
That's exactly right. And creating systems is the way to scale this. Most of the time when I'm working with companies, and I work with companies around the world and speak to companies around the world, they say, Gabrielle, your ideas are great. That's one more thing I have to do. I can't put this on top of everything else that I'm doing. So that's why creating systems and programs is so great. Yes, it's human, but it takes the human error out of it. So one of the challenges that most companies have is they say, well, we'd love to create a mentoring program, but no one in our company wants to mentor because they're all busy and they don't want to do things outside of work and they have their own families. And so creating systems and programs, creating what I call career concierge, people who help shepherd folks who, especially if they're new, if they're under 10 years inside of the industry, helping them make good decisions about what's next for them, helping them pace themselves. Hey, is this normal? Should it take this long? Hey, is it normal that I got this kind of a raise? Having someone to pace them, to give them insight and wisdom is incredibly important. So removing the pressure of us training every single manager on our team with the right language, the right, you know, the right phraseology, the right reaction. There's too much human error there. That's why I really like having clear career paths, a system in place that is, you set it up once and it's a systematic way to help people get clarity in their career.
That's interesting. Have you seen any examples that you can point to of organizations that are doing this right?
I mean, the companies that work with us. It's interesting. The answer is yes. Some industries do it naturally because they've had to. And so industries in the trades is really where we actually started to see this model work really well, where the trades for a very long time have had apprenticeship programs because that's how the skill was passed on. Well, we've moved beyond apprenticeship programs to now saying, hey, you don't need to go follow someone around and learn from what they're doing and watch them. You just need to sit in a classroom and read for a really long time. It's completely backwards. And so I've spent the last 5 years spending a lot of time focusing on the next generation in manufacturing and the trades because I've seen them doing it really well, where they have very clear career paths. So you're apprentice for, you know, X amount of years, then you decide what's your specialty, then you get your specialization, then you go work for someone else, and then most of them go on to start their own company. And it's just a really beautiful progression of learning from someone, applying what they've learned, and then teaching other people.
What would be like a key first step for doing this right? If I'm an employer and I haven't really given something like this a lot of thought, where do I begin?
Yeah, I mean, for most people, when they think about, okay, creating a clear career track, recognizing their employees, having a conversation around meaning and purpose at work, their brains start to spin because we have no context to it. And so we only solve problems that we believe are real problems. So step number one is identifying what the problem is and how much it's costing you. Most companies will never invest in something that they don't see that there's a cost to it. And so step one is identifying how much is it costing for you to lose one employee. Most companies I work with, and I talk to CFOs all the time, they don't know how much it costs for them to lose one employee. The Society for Human Resource Management has a very basic calculator, and we've included it in our book, Keep Them Longer, which is 1.5x someone's salary. So it's just a basic calculator to say, this is how much it's costing for you to lose one of your employees. And that doesn't necessarily include things like management distraction of having to bring on someone new, the amount of time to recruit, depending on how specialized the role is. However, having a clear calculator of how much it's costing you is step number one. Step number two is, okay, how do I create partners in the retention process? So it can't just be you as an employer putting everything on your back, because I get it. As an employer myself, whenever an employee comes to me with a problem, like, okay, adding that to the list, I'll add that to the list, and then I'll fix that. We have a hero complex as leaders, and we just don't need it. Create partners who can help come up with solutions. So step two is identify who are the stakeholders in reducing that turnover. Is it managers? Is it developing a committee? Is it your HR? Is it your HR lead? Helping people who can, bringing in people who can help not only carry the load, but be invested in the solution. And then number three is designing, and then ultimately launching a solution that has that buy-in. So it's not just one more program that you launch. It really becomes the core fabric of your company, that here we get people who are great, we keep people who are great, and we grow people who are great.
I'm kind of curious too, is there a role that employees themselves need to be playing here? I mean, what do they need to know? Surely part of the burden here falls on them as well.
Without a doubt. And I think the clarity piece really does come on employees as well. As employers, it's our role and responsibility to help give context to the work of the people that we're leading, that they need to know that what they're doing is making a difference. However, some employees are in companies or under leadership that don't have that capacity. Most leaders will replicate or rebel how they were led. And so if you're working underneath someone who is maybe very old school, very little crotchety, hard to work with, that's the kind of leader that they probably worked underneath. And so giving them some grace, they're probably doing the best that they can with what they know. But that being said, if you're in that situation, it's seeking clarity and context for yourself. And so doing some research. So say you're in a company and you're like, hey, I'm thinking about moving on to somewhere else, but I would rather not. Most employees I talk to who quit aren't like, I like quitting. This is so fun. I love interviews. I mean, it's not a hobby. People usually quit because it's a last resort. And I don't think that we see it as that. We see them as traitors rather than as victims. And so I think it's important for us to look as an employee at, okay, how is it that I can create a more fulfilling experience there? And so we have programs and processes to help employees find meaning at work, which essentially helps them to tap into their purpose, which is what they have inside of them to help other people. Mm-hmm. So if you help your employees find, we have two books about the whole thing, Keep Them Longer and The Purpose Factor, which help people find purpose and apply it at work. If you as an employee can do that, you're going to help create more buy-in for yourself. You're going to help create more value for your company. And odds are you're probably going to find more fulfillment because you're going to get better at the work you're doing. You're going to enjoy the work that you're doing, and you're probably going to get paid more for the work that you're doing.
That's great advice. I'm curious what you think the future of work looks like, Gabrielle.
I think it has a lot to do with individualizing the work experience. Mm-hmm. I think over the last 10 years, a lot of companies have tried valiantly to create more engaging workplaces. I mean, some of my clients do things like there's a kombucha bar or a rock wall or like shuffleboard or goat yoga. I mean, they've tried so hard to make it engaging, but it's actually become kind of comical. And so what their intention was, let's create something that people enjoy. But by doing that, they've created like the people who love it and the people who hate it. So they've actually created more division inside of their company than they necessarily needed to. And so I think the individualization of work really does come from assessments. If you as an employee can know, this is how I best work, this is how I'm most fulfilled, this is how I need to give feedback, this is how I need to receive feedback, this is what how I need to be recognized for my work. If we have core elements of information that we as employers can retain and understand with our employees, that, you know, when you're giving a one-on-one, you are able to look at a dashboard of, hey, I'm giving Bill some feedback and this is how he's going to best get that feedback. And this is what's most important to him. And here's how to articulate areas of improvement. If I have a dashboard of data, I can then articulate whatever information that I have inside of me in a way that's actually going to get received. Unfortunately, most employers measure activity, not results. And so I think creating an opportunity for people to say, you know, how did this impact retention? How did this impact productivity and overall company growth? Those are really, the bottom line is what matters most to companies. And so if you can create a clear through line between employee engagement and that bottom line growth, the more exciting advancements I think we're going to make when it comes to employee engagement.
A little closer to nirvana there. That would be great. Gabrielle, this has been a fantastic conversation. Thanks for your time, your insights. I appreciate you being here.
Oh my goodness, you bet. Thanks so much for having me on.
Really, really great stuff this week from Gabrielle Beauchet. Gabrielle is co-founder of The Purpose Company. She's a millennial expert, best-selling author. You can learn more at GabrielleBeauchet.com. That is GabrielleBeauchet.com. Also, just a reminder, Gabrielle is going to be keynoting the Maryland Association of CPAs 2022 Business and Industry Conference on May 24th. We're going to be in person for this one from the Maryland Live Hotel in Hanover. Plus, we'll be live streaming it too. You won't want to miss this one, folks. We've got it all on our website. You can learn more and register at macpa.org. And finally, don't forget this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. And here we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPA. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that's all I got, gang. Have a great week. We will talk to you again soon. Take care.